session number 20847, Reel 1.
Vincent Brandy, Reel 1. Where were you born, please?
In Clerkenwell, London.
Which year was this?
1918.
Did you grow up and have your schooling in Clerkenwell?
No. My parents were in business and I was put into a convent in Littlehampton at the age of 5 until I was 10. I came home and I went to school in Stoke Newington where we were living then.
How old were you when you finished schooling?
14.
So that must have been 32 when you left school.
Mm-hmm.
Did you work in the business or...?
No, I went to work.
What was your father's business?
Restaurateur.
Was that Italian?
Mm-hmm. How do you guess?
Which part of Italy did your parents come from?
From just below Naples, a little village called Minori.
And can you speak Italian?
Very little. I understand it well, but don't speak much.
So, what were you doing when war was declared?
I was a cabinet maker, working as a cabinet maker.
Had you joined any forces before the war?
No. Only as a lad, I joined the Naval Brigade, which I wanted to be, a sailor.
So, how did you feel when you heard the news that Chamberlain had declared war on Germany?
Pretty gutted, I think.
Had you not expected it?
Yes, really, I think. Yeah. In view of all the news that was around and the stories and everything that was going about Hitler and what have you.
Did the war affect you very much at first?
I was very frightened, very scared, knowing that I would be eventually called up for duty somewhere.
Were you in any bombing by the German Air Force of London?
Not really, because about the only time I experienced bombing in London was on the odd times when I came home on leave.
So, can you tell me about... Did you try to get into the Navy?
I did. I volunteered, actually. And on account of my parents being of Italian origin, they were Italian, they just scrubbed everything. I passed all the medical and everything.
Were your parents interned?
No, they were naturalised British subjects.
So, how did you come to be in the army?
I was called up on national service.
Can you tell what? When did you actually join?
Ooh, I think. Probably sure.
What happened once you joined up?
I went to Tidworth. In the army and did the normal training that soldiers do.
What was it like, the training?
I think it was fun most of the time because a lot of London chaps were there in the same call up, you know, and apparently there were one or two of them that I knew in Civvy Street, and it was fun at first.
How were you treated by the people in charge of the training?
Oh, very well, very well.
Were you able to cope with what they expected you to do?
Yes. I joined the boxing team and I was made quite popular.
What weight did you box at?
Featherweight, 9 stone 5.
what happened after the basic training?
After the training, we were sent to a service unit, which was the 3rd Battalion Royal Tank Regiment.
Where was that?
They were at Bottisham, Quay, near Cambridge.
What happened there to you?
Well, when we got there, they were being equipped for overseas service. But apparently they were over-established, and about 40 of us were taken off the establishment. So we didn't go.
So what happened to you instead?
We were taken from there. We went up to Gateshead, and we formed the new battalion of the 9th Royal Tank Regiment. And all of us that were on the staff were used as trainees for the incoming call-ups.
What was your particular job?
Drive a mech at first. We were teaching them driving and mechanics of a tank, or bring gun carriers and lorries and things like that, you know.
What kind of equipment did 9th RTR have?
Eventually they had, when we first started, because there was very little equipment, we had one Valentine tank and several Bren gun carriers, and that was about as much as we had until we moved from Newcastle, from Gateshead. We moved to Otley in Yorkshire, where we were equipped with Churchill tanks.
What did you think of those?
Oh, I thought they were marvellous at first, until we saw the gun.
What was that?
A 2-pounder on a 40-ton tank.
Did you realise even at first that it would be inadequate?
Well, having read all different accounts of the battles abroad and what have you, and the mention of the Germans 88 millimetres, we thought, what the hell are 2-pounders going to do to them?
So what did you actually do at Otley?
We did manoeuvres, training, on various army schemes, etc., you know.
Any incidents that happened to you there?
No.
Did you change your trade, or did you stay as a driver mechanic?
I was still a driver mech, yeah.
And then?
From there, where did we move to? I think we went from there, we went down to Eastbourne. And we did various manoeuvres on the downs, etc., etc., you know. And in the meantime, promotion came along, and I was made first a lance corporal, and eventually corporal, and eventually sergeant.
What about the people in the regiment? Did they come from all over?
Oh, they came from everywhere, yes. Came from all over the place. Scotland, Yorkshire, everywhere.
How did everybody fit in with each other?
They got on very well. They all became very good comrades, actually.
What were the officers like?
Very good indeed. Well, at least my troop officer was an excellent chap.
Do you remember his name?
Yes. Lieutenant Sutherland. Excellent fellow.
what do you remember happening next?
What happened with Eastbourne? Oh, from Eastbourne then, that's right. We went to a place in Kent. We went to Charing in Kent.
Was it the same sort of setup as at Eastbourne?
We were in in the grounds of a house called Walnut Tree Farm. We were stationed in the grounds and tents and billets and things.
Did you experience any air raids at this time?
Not in Charing. We had a few when we were at Eastbourne. We had a few air raids, and but no casualties on our behalf until we were leaving Eastbourne. That's right. We were putting the tanks onto tank transporters, onto the railway, onto the transporters, and some German fighters came over, machine gun in the station. But nothing of any no significance, really, no, nothing to report on that score.
That was at Eastbourne Railway Station?
Yeah.
Did you still have the same equipment?
Yeah, still Churchill's. But we were beginning to get 75mm guns.
And this was still 9th Royal Tank Regiment?
9th Royal Tanks, yeah.
So what happened next?
Well, after when we moved to Charing, I was transferred from there and went to the 141 RAC, the Buffs, who were just being converted from infantry to tanks.
Where did you find them?
They were in Charing, in Kent.
Did they have the same type of role as 9th RTR?
Yes, at the beginning, until we got the big surprise of becoming flamethrowers. Which was quite a shock, actually.
Did you welcome the idea or not?
Well, I don't think we realised really what it was all about, you know. When we were doing exercises and things, we thought how pretty ghastly it was. But other than that, we just took it as our job, you know.
So. The Churchills had to be fitted with flamethrower equipment?
Yep.
What did the equipment consist of?
It consisted of a 4-ton trailer holding 200 gallons of fuel, and that was towed at the back of the tank with a unit attached to the tank, you know.
How was it ignited?
It was ignited by the co-driver of the tank, had the flame gun, and it ignited with a spark as it pressed the trigger. A spark, and as the fuel came out, it ignited the fuel.
So did it just need one man to operate it, or two?
One man to operate it in action, just the one man. We were all concerned with when we had to reload and all that sort of thing, you know. We had to put hydrogen bottles in, and fill up with 200 gallons of fuel, etc., etc. We all were butt-knocked in on that, you know. But in actual action, only the one man operated the flame gun.
What kind of fuel was it?
They would never tell us. All we knew was it was 90% petrol with an added something or other. But they would never tell us what it was. And when it came out, it was like elastic. You could get hold of it and stretch it like elastic.
Solid?
Yeah.
So what was the range of the flamethrower?
With luck, with the prevailing wind, you might get 200 yards.
Was it dangerous to the people in the tank?
Only if you got here, I think. It didn't pass through the actual tank, it passed underneath the tank, the pipe, up to the gun.
What kind of objectives was it to be used against?
Mainly against pillboxes and to assist infantry in towns and villages and sort of thing, you know, where there were snipers and houses and that, we would flame. And particularly in the open country where snipers were entrenched in dugouts and things, you know.
Did you also have guns in the tank?
Oh yes, you had a 75mm and a Beezer machine gun in the turret.
What do you remember happening next?
After all the training, etc., of course, D-Day came along and that was into action then.
Can you take me through, step by step, what happened to you from assembling in England to go over?
Yes, but I forget the place we went to. We had to go and waterproof all the tanking and the equipment. And make ready for the landing. Oh, I did forget that I was posted to Scotland for about 3 months, teaching or having tanks prepared for troops coming up to learn how to operate the landing craft, how to embark and disembark on landing craft. I was up there for about, I think it was about 3 months altogether.
Where did you train there?
We were at Inverary.
How did that training go?
Quite well. We were... The little bit, few of us that were there, about six of us, just had to keep the tanks prepared for the troops as they came up. We didn't actually do any training on landing and disembarking and all that sort of thing.
So you were taking me through the preparations for D-Day?
Yeah, we were, I think it's called Blackdown, the place we were at, to waterproof. And then we awaited time to go to Leon Solent for the landing. I think we were there about 24 hours before we actually embarked on the landing craft to go across.
What was the crossing like?
Quite smooth, actually. Very comfortable. A couple of emergency calls at night from U-boats, but nothing happened, fortunately.
What did you take with you?
In what way do you mean?
In the way of equipment. What personal equipment?
Personal equipment, just your army issue, that's all. Nothing special in any way.
And the landing?
The landing was quite frightening. It was something, well, one hadn't never experienced anything like it before, and it was quite frightening. And it was pretty awful when we landed on the beaches and saw bodies lying around, you know, and quite frightening. It was, at least I was frightened, I don't know about anybody else. By which time I was a tank commander, not a driver then.
In how much water did your tank land in?
We landed fairly dryly, actually. We were very fortunate that our landing craft went right onto the beach and we landed quite cleanly.
Which beach was this?
I can't remember the name of the beach now. It's in that book, but I can't remember where it was now.
Never mind, that'll be on record anyway.
Mm.
Could you see anything as you landed?
Not a great deal. Apparently, advanced troops in front of us had made quite headway, and I think we went in about 3 or 4 miles before we actually harboured, what we call harboured.
What could you hear as you landed?
Warfare. Guns and things and fighting, but it was in the distance to where we were at the time.
Did anything hit your tank?
I got hit once. We were in a hold down position firing across a valley to some German tanks which were in the forest across the road, and I didn't know at the time, but when we were called back, that the tail end of my trailer had been hit, but not the tank itself.
Did it ignite?
No, it just hit the corner and took the corner off. Very fortunate.
But this presumably was after D-Day.
Yeah.
But coming back to D-Day itself, once you had harboured down, what happened then?
Well, we just awaited orders for action or whatever we were called upon to do. I think it was about a day before we were actually called into a particular action. I can't remember the name of the place, or we had to go and clear a particular point that was holding up the infantry. And we lost the tank in that action, but we were fortunate as far as the squadron was concerned. You know.
How was that tank lost?
I think it hit a mine. And the crew bailed out, and we never knew what happened to them. We never saw them again.
And which squadron and troop were you in?
I was in B Squadron, number 7 troop of the 141 RAC.
Do you remember who was in your tank crew at that time?
Mm-hmm. Very well.
Could you go through them?
Yep. My driver was Trooper Elworthy. The co-driver was Trooper Brough. My gunner was Freddie Danes, who lived in Enfield. And my wireless op was Tommy Allen, who lived in Bolton. And we remained that crew till the end of the war, apart from the flame gunner. He was transferred to another troop, and I got another flame gunner. His name was Stan Begley.
Where did he come from?
He came from Romford.
So, you described how the action started for the unit. What do you remember happening next?
Just waiting for the next call, next action that was required of us. I think the next big move was to capture the airfield at Carpique, which is the paragraph you just read in that book.
Can you describe what you remember of that? Has it affected you?
Not really. I remember waiting on format point before we went in. There was a terrific barrage from artillery from behind us, and I thought, what the hell is this? And eventually I realised what it was, and I wasn't quite so frightened after that. And eventually we went in, and we attacked various points of the airfield where there were lots of snipers and things, and pillboxes. And I remember going over a huge bank in order to relieve the crew of the other tank that you read off in the book there to get them away from their tank, to save them from their tank. And as we were going over, I thought, you know, what the hell? There's snipers down there, they can easily hit the belly of the tank, you know. But fortunately, nothing happened. Just a few snipers with ordinary rifles. And we just shot a few shots of flame and they disappeared, you know.
So it was a flame gun attack?
Oh, yes, yes.
On Carpique?
Yeah. Any attack that we did was always a flame gun attack. That was our job. We were never tank v tank battle as such.
So at that time you'd gone to the rescue of another tank?
Yes, another tank of my troop.
What had happened to it?
It approached a pillbox and got stuck in an anti-tank ditch and couldn't move, couldn't reverse, couldn't go forward, couldn't do anything.
Do you think the Germans might retaliate against you if you were captured for using a flamethrower?
Yes, I do. In fact, I did read in that book of a tank crew that were captured, and they were taken out and shot. As prisoners, they were taken out and shot.
Was that from your unit?
No, from another tank unit.
Anything else you remember from Carpique?
I remember the squadron leader, Nigel Ryle. He got out of his tank and was walking around the field, and I shouted across to him to get back into his tank because there was snipers everywhere, you know, and which he did. And one particular German jumped up on his tank and sat on the back of his tank, capitulated.
What were your own feelings about the enemy?
Well, we didn't think very nicely of them. We thought they were a lot of bastards, to be quite honest.
Vincent Brandy, Reel 2.